Back together again, you and I chatting it up Friday style, wrapping up a big week on August 22nd, 2025 for Connecticut Today. I opened the show looking at a report that the Trump White House might extend its use of military personnel to more U.S. cities who happen to be dealing with crime problems. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso dropped by with his weekly update, including more info on strengthening ethics in the Park City. CBS News military analyst, retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland dropped by. He discussed what security guarantees for Ukraine might look like in any peace deal with Russia.
So if you lived in a city, ostensibly a blue city, that has a crime problem, big cities, New York, Chicago, D.C., L.A., and again, whenever you have large amounts of men and women in large metropolitan cities, you're going to have crime. It's too bad. Maybe someday down the pike, hundreds of years to now, in a sort of, you know, Star Trek goodness where everyone is united here, which will never happen. You know, maybe we won't have the crime we do. But for now, we do. And when you have these major metro areas like D.C. and New York and L.A. and Chicago, anytime you get millions of human beings under one big, beautiful blue sky, you're going to have some creeps. You're going to have criminals. You're going to have gangbangers. You're going to have illegals. You're going to have people that just are deviants, mutants, however you want to put it. They're criminals. They don't care what ethnicity they attack. They don't care what neighborhood they attack. There will be criminals. Sadly, it's part of what the human condition is. Now, supposing in one of those cities, New York, L.A., Chicago, D.C., Baltimore, you knew that the policemen and the police women there were trying their damnedest. I mean, they're trying their hardest. But even in some of these cities that have large police departments, not hardly large enough, right? I mean, what if you knew that in New York City, a city of 8.5 million people, there are only 35,000 cops? Now, when you say 30,000 cops, sounds like a lot until you compare it to a city of 8.5 million people. D.C. only has 3,100 cops. Think about that. 3,100 cops for the entirety of the district of Washington, D.C., and they all don't work at the same time. They got to be home. They got to be sleeping. They got to be with their families. So in these areas, if you're an inhabitant of that area, right, man or woman, and you live in an area that has seen a lot of crime, and even though there are crime reduction efforts, you still hear the gunshots, you still hear the bang bang at night, you still wake up in the morning and say, oh my God, there was a carjacking a couple of miles from my house or my mom's house or my boyfriend's house or whatever, my kid's house, whatever, you're scared. And then the president of the United States says, hey, we have to make this better. And we are going to scramble and get more federal law enforcement there and more use of the military, maybe the National Guard. How would that make you feel? Now, I know there are people that would immediately, reject that, knee-jerk reaction, say, oh, no, you've got the posse comitatus and stuff like that. But should there really, and posse comitatus means you cannot use national forces for any types of local law enforcement. I get that. I understand that. But is another threat here from President Trump kind of resetting all this? Now, again, you see the troops being used, the National Guard members, the Federales, some of them in D.C. Now they're going to be carrying guns. Pete Hegseth said that. It's kind of notching it up here, ratcheting it up. Maybe that's a message to the bad guys and gals out there. But here's my point. Is it a bad thing if crime goes down? And please spare me the, well, you know, crime has been dropping. Yeah, I love when they say, well, crime has been dropping. It was pure unadulterated hell on earth. And since Trump brought some people in here, it's kind of just a lower level of hell
a higher ring of hell. We're not down to the seventh ring of hell. We're up in the second or third ring of hell. You know what I mean. I don't mean to denigrate the fine people of D.C., but you get what I mean here. And the reason I start with this today is because I have a simple question for you. In as much as we see a big story, you just heard it on CBS, and it's all over the place here. Trump says the next federal crime crackdown will target Chicago. Oh, my God, that's it. He's going after our democracy. Or maybe it'll work. What's wrong with a federal crime crackdown? Maybe, just maybe. Well, he's trying to score points, Paul, for the midterms and the 2020. Okay, maybe he is. But in the process, if less people get shot, and this is a big if, and I'm no criminologist, I'm looking at it from the 35,000-foot view here. If anything Donald Trump does, or any president that matter does, to feed his ego and to help his election or reelection efforts, if it keeps people from getting killed or shot or carjacked or robbed or stabbed or maimed, what's wrong with it? Now, I know there are legal arguments here. I understand that. But again, is this just a scenario here of he's going to do something and the other side will take the bait and they will try and, you know, verbally toss a verbal salad around justifying, well, there's going to be some crime? Trump says federal crime crackdown will target Chicago next. And by the way, Chicago gets literally, folks, and I'm not making this up. I visited there. I have a dear friend there and his wife and family. It's a wonderful city to visit. Downtown Chicago, architecturally, is probably the nicest city in the country. It is, along the river there. I've been to Comiskey Park, whatever they call it now, U.S. Cellular Field. I've been to Wrigley a few times. I've been to some Chicago Bears games against the Jets. Oh, you go to a Jets game. Okay. But the bottom line, Chicago does not deserve the level of violence that it gets every single weekend. So for whatever reason, maybe for a purely and purely selfish, here I come, the Dark Knight Batman Donald Trump, he is talking about sending federal law enforcement into Chicago. What's wrong with that? If it keeps people from getting shot, what's wrong with that? How can you argue if he does this and if it goes as he's saying it's going to go? What if the sight of a National Guard's man or woman, maybe with a sidearm, along with a Chicago police officer or officers to give them a helping hand? What's wrong with that? And I know you can argue the constitutionality of this, but maybe the guy here in the Oval Office, maybe, as much as a lot of people can't stand him, and I get you, I understand that, maybe he's illustrating a point here. So we start with this at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Do you approve of the Trump White House threatening to send more military personnel to big cities grappling with crime problems? You all right with that? Even if it's just a temporary drop. What do progressives always say about gun laws? Oh, if it saves one child. All right. Well, if Trump's sending those troops into Chicago, no matter how much it costs, even if it is expensive, isn't it worth it? I got to tell you, the left, they've taken the bait again. I have CNN, I know. I have CNN up here in the studio monitor. Here's their lower third, the Chiron on the bottom. GOP states send troops to D.C. despite high crime rates in own cities. Well, who are the mayors of those cities? You know, these Republican-led states, they do have a lot of Democratic mayors, just saying. But this is how they're trying to deflect. And the reason I wanted to start with this today is because I knew this was going to happen. And they're trying to say, well, why are all these Republican states doing this? I don't know, because the Democratic states won't. And we start with this. Do you approve of the White House threat to send military personnel to more big cities grappling with crime problems. And I guess the next area on the radar here, if you'll excuse the expression, is Chicago. Chicago has dozens and dozens and dozens of people shot every single weekend. Compared to New York, New York is Beverly Hills and Nirvana compared to Chicago. Look, I just pulled up. I did a basic Google search here. And by the way, Sue, Doug, and Victor, hang on. I promise I'll get to all of you. I just did a basic search. I put in Chicago killings and shootings. Chicago shooting, 4 shot, 3 fatally, 2 in East Garfield Park. Chicago crime, 3 killed, another wounded in Garfield Park. Chicago shooting, critically injured 17-year-old boy. Chicago shootings this past weekend. By the way, all you have to do is put in Chicago shootings this past weekend. Do that on a Monday and see what happens. Here's one from last week. Chicago shootings this weekend. 34 people shot, 5 fatally in Chicago. And you're going to have some people on the left bitching and moaning that Trump, whether it's for political purposes or not, who cares? If it stops people from getting killed, who the F cares? But I tell you, they will take the bait, hook, line, and sinker here. Doug and Darianne, we'll start with you. Doug, how are you, sir?
Good. I'm on speakerphone. I can take myself off.
No, you sound okay. You're good, Doug. Yep, you sound good and loud.
Okay. The reason I called in on this is because you're talking about Googling stuff. I'm looking at the Cook County Victims Assistance Fund, mm-hmm. the Chicago Victims Assistance Fund.
Mm-hmm.
These are compensation funds that pay you. I saw one was $45,000 if you get shot.
Mm.
Don't they look at the public policy that after Mayor Daley left, it's been put in, that's led to people, I think, shooting themselves for money.
Cool.
100 people shot, 5 dead. Are they that bad of shots, or are the bullets that ineffective?
There are just not enough cops in Chicago, Doug, and their mayor right now, Brandon Johnson, might very well be the most incompetent mayor on the planet. This guy, Doug, wanted to get rid of the shot spotter system, the one that Bridgeport uses and New Haven uses to respond to shootings quicker. This guy wanted to get rid of it. And the black and Hispanic members of the Chicago City Council said, you're out of your mind.
He got rid of me and every member of my family. Most of them moved to Florida. I moved to Connecticut.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Okay, but trust me, the last mayor wasn't much better. But you can't pay people who get shot. They don't solve these crimes. They're drive-by.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why would you abort a child if you get $45,000 and they get shot?
It is. And, Doug, I do have to go. Good to talk with you, and I love Chicago. It is a... It's a beautiful city. It really is. Victor in Terreville. Hello, Victor. How are you?
Hey, how are you? How you doing?
I'm good, Vic. What's up?
You know, you said Batman, and I was just thinking, you know, I think every city in the United States should have a commissioner Gordon, especially here in our background, because our backyard here, and you know for a fact, I've lived here all my life in this state. In regards to a few times I've left and been in other states for a year or so,
yeah.
Job relations.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you one thing. Hartford, Waterbury, Bridgeport, New Haven, boy, do we need some of that in there, too. Because even though, as far as the head honcho that we have here, states that oh, everything's gone low and all the crime's gone low, well, I don't think so. And that's one thing I wanted this intervention. And you know what? I believe that he's doing a good job doing that, and I hope Chicago is next. You know, I compare Chicago like I compare the island of Puerto Rico where I was born.
Yeah.
Okay? Wasn't raised there. I was raised in Bridgeport.
Mm.
But I was born there. And I visited there many times in my lifetime. In fact, I have family living there and so forth. And
okay.
Let me tell you something. You could put the worst cities here in Connecticut, the worst cities in Illinois, the worst cities in California, New York,
yeah.
And Puerto Rico become the number one hit.
Really?
Of crime.
Okay? Wow.
And killings on an every weekend basis.
Well, there was a guy, and Victor, I do have to run, my friend. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. There was an American tourist that was shot and killed in a club. Victor, thank you. In Puerto Rico, he was down there to see a Bad Bunny concert. Some guy got into an argument with him, and he's killed. Yes, I have my opinions. I've been doing that since 5 or 6 years old, and people have been telling me, will you shut up, please? Ooh, ki kyakyarone. Chris Caruso may have heard that term once or twice in his Italian life. Chris, did you ever hear anybody called a chiacchierone like I was when I was a little one?
Oh, sure. I've called a few people chiacchierone, too. The ones who won't listen and they want to keep talking over you. Yeah. And I've thrown around Stunat a couple of times.
Did you use that up at the State House?
A couple of times, Paul. Yeah, you know. But it was really with just sometimes people just get caught up with themselves and they want to talk over you. You're trying to explain something. And then I say, oh, what a cacchierone. And then they look at me because they don't know what that means, you know.
Chris Caruso with us.
I promise I will not change my name.
No, that's okay. Chris, as you have observed the last week or so, Chris, what is on the front of your mind this week?
Well, it's still the Ethics Commission in Bridgeport. And I give a lot of credit to the Charter Revision Commission because they're pushing back when something is done to weaken the Ethics Commission or the new commission that we've spoken about. They push back and they've been successful. So I give them a lot of credit. They're doing final review right now, and about a week or so they'll make their final recommendations to the council. But I'm just proud of each member that they're standing up to piece together and to promote the strongest ethics commission and the municipal ethics office in Bridgeport. I think that bodes well for the people of our city. And then just proud of the commission, what they're doing right now to make that work. Yeah.
So Chris, this will strengthen, right, a position that's already there and then create a new body. Do I have that correct?
Oh, that's right. It would be a transition. So the existing ethics commission will transition into the new commission. But if members' terms have expired, then, you know, the appointing body, the mayor and the city council, would have the ability to appoint someone new. Uh-huh. And it would also create the first Office of Municipal Ethics. Currently, the Ethics Commission, many people have criticized because it doesn't have the power to take action. Mm-hmm. And in some cases it does, but it doesn't. And so it's been weak at best. And that's not a reflection on those current commissioners. It's really the Ethics Commission, the structure of it, and the ability to take action. So this new commission that's being proposed with an Office of Municipal Ethics will actually be positive because they'll have increased powers, and no one has to fear it except those who are violating.
Well, yeah.
So I think it's a step in the right direction. The final version hasn't come out yet, but it's working through the process. And as I said, the commissioners are pushing back to make it the strongest ethics commission possible and an Office of Municipal Ethics. Mm. It bodes well for Bridgeport.
That's good. And finally, Chris, I was heartened to see a few days ago, and I don't think we had the chance to talk about this, that the state completed its review of the school board spending in Bridgeport, and it was good to see there wasn't any rank criminality or illegality there, but it's good now that they have said, listen, they've got to tighten the ship a lot more on this, and that, I guess, Chris, what the final report said, they've just have to watch, you know, moving from column A to column B, these millions of dollars here, so they, I hope, Chris, I don't know about you, but I hope they will tighten things up.
I think they will, Paul. I think they have to. You know, there's an election this year. New board members will be elected. And my hope is whoever is elected, make sure they tighten the budgetary processes that are taking place. You know, what happens many times, the Board of Education is a volunteer board.
Yeah.
So they're not working on it on a daily basis. Many of them don't have the financial background. So, you know, they're taking their lead from the professionals. Mm. And the professionals have to be careful to make sure they record the dollars in the right columns, that they actually don't move money from one spot to another without the board knowing it. Yeah. So the board has to put procedures in place that holds accountable those individuals who are handling the finances for the school system. I think it's imperative. And I think that's one of the good things that have come out of the state involvement with the Board of Education, mm-hmm. that finally a forensic audit was done.
Yeah.
You know how long people have been asking for that? So finally, we got it done. There's transparency now, and there's ways to correct it. And if you noticed as well, the State Board of Education negotiated a contract with the bus company.
Yes, yes.
So now the kids don't have to walk, like if you're in high school, 2.5 miles to the school. It's all been worked out. And, you know, in large part because of the State Board of Education mm-hmm. stepping in and being involved. So, again, it's a positive thing for Bridgeport.
Yeah, and finally, Chris, you know, with that whole walking to school thing, I'm sure you and I heard, as I heard growing up, our mothers and grandparents saying, oh, what are these buses? I used to walk 5 miles in a blizzard, right? Right?
You know, Paul, I lived 8 blocks from my school.
Yeah.
It was a Catholic school on the east side of
yeah.
Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And I would walk there in snowstorms.
Yeah.
And in those days, Paul, we had a 6:30 mass
yeah. oh,
every
geez.
Morning.
6:30.
Okay?
Oh.
And the kids today say, 6:30? I says, yeah. And you had to be there because the nuns were at the top of the steps at the church. And if you weren't there, they would call your mother.
Oh, my
so,
God.
I would go up, Paul, and I remember the snow. I was a kid then. The snow was up around my chest. And I'd say, sister, it's so cold out here. She said, well, you're here now. Go into the warmth of God, you know? And you know, Paul, they had the old hats and everything, you know?
Oh, yeah. And
I don't think they ever got cold because they were wool. You know, the habits were wool.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's what we had to do in those days. We walked and
yeah.
went to school, and that was it. You
yep.
know, it was just a matter of course of what we did. You know?
That was it. Chris Caruso. Chris, good to have you on again. Have a happy
Thank
weekend,
you,
and we'll chat next week. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, Paul.
All right,
care.
There you go. Yeah, right, folks? Come on. How many of us heard it? These damn kids with the buses. I walked 23 blocks each way to school back and forth in the blizzard. Did I ever tell you about the time that I walked to school in the middle of a hurricane? To just for a few moments here, to the Russia-Ukraine story, we hear about, well, security guarantees. A security guarantee. It won't go anywhere without the U.S. Participating in some way in security guarantees for Ukraine. What does that actually mean? And what would that entail? Joining us right now, we always love having this gentleman on, retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. Colonel, good afternoon. Great to have you with us. You see this phrase, Colonel, security guarantees for Ukraine. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, of course, this has been the problem that the Ukrainians have had for a long time. Remember, Ukraine becomes independent in 1991. At the end of the Soviet Union, and an agreement is signed amongst the succeeding states at a place called Tashkent, in which they basically acknowledge the sovereign borders of all their respective territories. So Russia acknowledges the sovereign territory of Ukraine. Well, that's violated, of course, in 2014 when the Russians seized Crimea yeah. and when they also foment a rebellion in the Donetsk Basin area, which is where the war is going on right now. In the interim, back in 1994, there was another agreement called the Budapest Memorandum, signed by the United States, British, Russians, etc., also guaranteeing the integrity of Ukraine when they transferred all their nuclear weapons to Russia. That, again, of course, was violated. So the Ukrainians have seen their security violated 3 times by the Russians, who have, you know, said that's your sovereign territory. So now if they're going to sign up to a new agreement and perhaps cede some territory to Russia, they want some kind of guarantee that this time this agreement's going to stick
yeah.
and that there would be repercussions against the Russians that would either deter Russia from making further aggression or even defend Ukraine if aggression reoccurred.
Now, the president said the other day, Colonel, no American boots on the ground, but maybe U.S. air power. Now, what are your thoughts on that? I assume we have bases in the area, which would already be in the Russian targeting, just in case. Talk about that a little.
Yeah, of course, Mr. Trump has kind of equivocated on this. Initially, he said when the Europeans met him in the White House on Monday that, in fact, the United States might participate even to the tune of ground troops. Then he's backed off of that and said, well, maybe air power. But again, unclear what that means. Does that mean close support aircraft like A-10s? Does that mean a no-fly zone over Ukraine that would prevent Russian aircraft from, you know, assaulting Ukraine directly. Mm-hmm. Does that mean aircraft that also might attack Russian aircraft flying over Russian territory that was launching glide bombs onto Ukrainian territory, which they do rather routinely, by the way, right now? So what does that mean? Where you're spot on, though, Paul, because the second question is, where would those aircraft be based? I actually believe it'd be very unlikely they would be based on Ukrainian territory for, again, as you suggest, the obvious problem of them being targeted there. More likely they would be based on other bases, NATO bases, somewhere in the region. We have a large air base we operate out of in Ramstein in Germany. Mm-hmm. There could be forward bases perhaps in Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, other places that could accommodate U.S. air. But we're a long way from getting there because not only is this whole thing unclear and problematical in subsequent discussions, though there was a belief the Russians had accepted some participation and some side of security guarantees. Mm-hmm. Well, we've now had the Russian foreign minister, Mr. Lavrov, who I actually met one time, come up and say, no, there's no possibility of any security guarantees for Ukraine unless Russia has a veto over security guarantees. Now, think about that. The person we're trying to deter or defend against gets a veto or whether or not you can actually get the means to deter or defend against them. That kind of sounds backwards to me, Paul.
Yeah. And finally, Colonel, when this is, and we pray this all ends, are we going to see maybe a border situation here between Ukraine and Russia when this all ends, God willing, that looks something like what we have, I don't know, between North and South Korea with, you know, guard towers there and all the, you know, the no-go territory and the barbed wire and the razor wire? Is that what you think is in the cards here or not?
Boy, it really could be. And you move from a ceasefire to an armistice. And literally in Korea, people forget we're in an armistice.
Yeah.
Okay. There's never been a peace treaty that ended that particular conflict. And you have the, you know, landmines and barbed wire, as you rightfully point out. Yeah, you can certainly end up in that particular kind of a condition. But we're a long way from that, I think. And unfortunately, I don't think a whole lot has changed since Mr. Trump went off to Alaska to meet with Vladimir Putin. I think we're pretty much where we are, and what we've seen really is a lot of form, a lot of pageantry, a lot of ceremonies, a lot of world leaders meeting, Putin, Trump, of course, seven European leaders, Zelensky, but in terms of moving the needle any bit closer to the peace agreement that you and I agree we really would like to have, I don't see it being any closer right now, Paul.
CBS News military analyst and retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, thank you. Have a happy weekend. We appreciate it, sir. Thanks.
You too, Paul.
Appreciate it. There you go.